Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On DAB Plus, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello and welcome to TalkSport 2 Women's Football Show podcast. I'll be here every week bringing you the best bits and exclusive content from the show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week we're on Monday at 7pm. So swipe for TalkSport 2, find Monday, you can listen for there. This week on the show, I was joined by broadcaster and Spurs fan Chris Powers. We kicked off the show by discussing all the brilliant work that Chris does within the world of football. I couldn't think of a more fitting day. I've been trying to get you on for a little while. I wanted you in the studio with me. You'll be back with me again, I'm sure. But the fact that I have you on today and Spurs have reached their first ever FA Cup final, I mean, we'll talk more about that in the show, but how are you feeling? Have you come down to reality yet? What's going on?
I can't even begin to explain my emotions, Leanne. Honestly, I'm so, so happy. I think at the final whistle yesterday, it hadn't obviously had sunk in and I was just crying because it's just not anything I would have imagined to happen this quickly to the team, I suppose. You know, I just think about hanging over a railing at Cheshunt with 150 other people not that long ago. You know, Jess Naz and Ash Neville were in that team where we were hanging over the railing at Cheshunt. And now to see them both yesterday play such an incredible part in getting us to an FA Cup semi-final, you know, in the stadium is unbelievable. Honestly, I'm still bouncing off the walls. So, you know, and I long may it continue, frankly.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was doing the commentary with Joe Shannon in the quarterfinal against City when you went to penalties, all of a sudden, I was doing the game and I was thinking, I'm sure I can hear Chris. Then I stood up, I had my mic in my hand and I was trying to find you. Little did I know, you were literally leading the chant right down there with a friend of yours. And I was like, that is definitely Chris. So where did your love for the club come from? You know, you love Spurs, you follow the women's team, the men's team. Where did it all start?
So I have been a Spurs fan all my life. I can't even remember when I first loved Spurs, but my family came from Cyprus in the 60s and my first uncle arrived in North London, like every good Cypriot at that time, lived in Haringey and went to see what was in 1961, the greatest team in the land, which was Tottenham Hotspur. And from that, when the rest of the family came over, my mum's youngest brother, spent a lot of time in our house when I was growing up because he was single. So he used to come around and get his dinner, sometimes his breakfast. And he was really into Spurs. And so he had a season ticket with his mates. And one day, showing my age now, 1980, when I was 6 years old, he said to me, oh, so-and-so can't come. Do you want to come? And I was like, yes, please. My dad's a Man United fan.
Top man.
You know, and that again, you know, being in a village in Cyprus, 1958, the Munich air crash, that's what kind of connected him to Manchester United. But he's not a match going fan. So I've always loved football as a kid. I've just always had a ball at my feet. And so going to White Hart Lane on that day in 1980 would be Everton 3-0. I remember it very vividly. I also remember in the days where you used to have to wind the car window up and down, of like winding the window down, putting my scarf in it, winding it back up and flying it all the way home from Tottenham to Southgate. So, yeah, I mean, and I've loved Spurs since then. And I promised that six-year-old kid that I would get a season ticket when I grew up. So when I got a job, interesting, because like around my sort of political awakening, my sort of feminism coming out, I slightly fell out of love with the game in my sort of late teens and early 20s, because I thought, I love this game, but I'm not sure it loves me back. But, you know, I've kind of worked through all of that. And because I promised my 6-year-old self I'd get this season ticket, I when I got a job, I was in my sort of, I was 23, I think. I went to what was the White Hart Lane ticket office. I said, can I have a season ticket? And yes, this was the Premier League, but it was the late 90s. And they said, sure, where do you want to sit? And I was like, oh, I don't know where I want to sit. They offered to take me into the stadium, but stupidly, I said no. And I was like, oh, just, I don't want to sit behind the goals. I don't want to be in the West End, because that was the posh seats. So I wanted a bit of energy. So I was like, oh, the old shelf. So in the East End. And I wanted to be in the lower tier as well. And for anyone who remembers the old White Hart Lane, there were two big white stanchions in the East End, because they rebuilt it. So I spent nearly 20 seasons about 4 rows behind one of those poles, so I couldn't quite see the 18-yard line. I had to like do a little duck here and there. But yeah, very, very fond memories, absolutely, you know. And I, as you can tell from the way I'm talking about Leanne, you know, I love it. And I love it from a footballing perspective. I love it from all the characters that you sort of see and interact with. I love it from the fact that there are people that I know and sort of love from sitting with them at Spurs that I don't see them in any other context, but you still feel that connection with them. I love it because of, I go with my nephew now, but when I first got my season ticket, I went with a mate of mine from sixth form. Then I went with my cousin and she moved to Cyprus and she's not with us anymore. So that was amazing to have that time with her. I went with my late wife for a number of years, because she was a Spurs fan too. So like all of those connections, all of those memories, and you remember it by a goal or a tackle, or, you know, my first date with my late wife was Bill Nicholson's testimonial, you know, like, you know, so like you can't, You there's no way of like describing how much that means to someone who's not a football fan, but any football fan can understand it.
Well, and I love Monica, how much you love Spurs, Chris, because I've got loads of questions prepared for you, and I feel like I should have needed to ask you one and you could run away with it. You know, it's amazing your love for Tottenham, and you know, I think I was so blessed that I got to meet you, and I wish I would have met you sooner, because I met you about 2 years ago now. I hosted the panel for EE's Hope United. You were on my panel, and like, you know, we spoke a lot about Proud Lily Whites and, you know, how active you are involved in that. You just celebrated 10 years recently. Like, I want to go back to the start and how that kind of came about and what kind of boundaries and walls you had to knock down to kind of, what were the club open to it? Was there, what type of questions were you being asked? Because I feel like you guys are one of the first ones. And when you talk about you being like, you know, a Cypriot, that's one of the only flags I see. I don't know, when you watch a Tottenham game, you see the Cyprus flag and you see the LGBTQ plus flag and the trans visibility flag. They're the only two I see. So I think that's very fitting that they're both really relatable to you and you're so active in that club. But tell me back to the beginning and how that felt.
Absolutely. Just quickly on the Spurs Cyprus, that was one of the things I loved, because the Spurs Cyprus flag has nothing to do with me, but the old White Hart Lane, they were literally next to each other. Yeah. I used to absolutely love it. So in 20... You might remember in 2014, the Rainbow Laces campaign was run by Paddy Power, weirdly, right? And they did this kind of thing at the end of 2014 where they dumped a load of Rainbow Laces at every Premier League football ground and basically said, oh, if you don't force your players to wear these, you're homophobic, which was, you know, there's all sorts of things wrong with that. But also the creative, because it was Paddy Power, was a bit like, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, get behind gay footballers. So it wasn't really the sort of thing that Spurs wanted to get involved in. What they did think, though, was that they should probably do something to engage their LGBTQ plus fan base. At the same time, I'd been having some conversations on Twitter a few months earlier, at a time when you can have those conversations on Twitter and actually have some proper engaging, you know, conversations. Yeah, about how we should be doing something at Spurs, because I'd heard about this thing, I hate to say it, called the Gay Gooners. And I was like, oh, we should do something like that. So anyway, we ended up long story, but we ended up in a room at White Hart Lane, about eight of us, with this idea of what are we going to do, with one member of staff from the club, who's incredible, the late Jonathan Waite, to sort of say, okay, what is it that you want to do? And the three things that we came up with that day are still the three things that drive us now. One is about building community. So bringing people together, you know, that feeling you get as a fan, and you could times 10 as a player, I imagine, when the ball's flying through the air and about to hit the back of the net, and everyone rises at the same time. And that feeling you get is like nothing else. And I don't ever want to deny that to anybody. I talked a little bit earlier about how I fell out of love with the game a little bit. And I've got loads of my mates from the Proud Lily Whites, particularly from gay men, who were like, I loved football. And then I came out and I thought, oh my God, this isn't, you know, like, I'm not sure if this is for me. So that, about bringing that community and saying there is a community of LGBTQ+ football fans and Spurs fans that you can go to games with, talk about the games, except, you know, all of that stuff. And in that visibility piece, that flag at White Hart Lane really matters. You know, and sometimes people go, oh, you know, it's just a flag, it's just a symbol. But no, actually, I can't tell you how many people, you know, you just talked about it, have come, you know, sent us messages over the years. You know, I saw that flag and I thought, oh gosh, Spurs welcomes me and I belong here. Or parents saying, my kid's never been interested in watching football with me. And then suddenly they see that flag and go, oh, Dad.
It's on every corner, you know, every time you watch a Spurs game, it's so visible. And I love it because it's not just like, you know, in the distance, the smallest flag you're going to see. And I think that's credit to you, though, Chris, and people that are actively, you know, trying to. And you spoke about falling out of love with the game. I completely empathize with that. And it wasn't due to my sexuality why I retired, but I felt like I was loving the game. It wasn't really loving me back when I was having coaches that weren't really kind of, you know, allowing me to be myself when it comes to the personality wise. And I always felt like, you know, I battled with that. And something I want to go back to what you said, because I remember on the panel, I get the feeling you said you feel like, you know, certain clubs and organisations are not really doing enough. You know, you mentioned the gay Gooners. I know you said it's not to do with Arsenal-Tottenham rivalry. It's nothing to do with that. And I remember on the panel, you were kind of, you know, we had someone from the gay Gooners on there and you actually said it to him there. And I loved it. I thought it was great, because it was a conversation and, you know, it's about making things better. But what do you think, like, other clubs can do, not just the gay Gooners, but other clubs, to kind of make it more, you know, welcoming to our community? And what more can they do?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think one of the reasons why I think we've, you know, when we started, it was us, the gay Gooners, Proud Canaries from Norwich and Canal Street Blues from Manchester City. And one of the reasons those have had that sort of success in terms of driving more inclusion and being welcoming is that you have an active fans with a supportive club. And actually you need both, but you don't need millions of active fans. If you've got two or three, I think, you know, the clubs that sort of say, oh, you know, we're not sure. And, you know, actually you just need two or three fans that or more, whatever. And you need to support them. You need to, like, actually listen to the things that they think are important and try and drive that. And you're always going to get criticism. I think that's the other thing. And some fans get a bit, some clubs can be, and I've seen this, can be a little bit kind of cagey about, well, we don't want to, like, upset our other fans. And, you know, and there are, you know, and it might be, it's easy for me to say, because, you know, Spurs sell every ticket, right? Arsenal sell every ticket. Manchester City sell every ticket. I guess if you're a team in League One and you've got your, you know, your LGBTQ+ fans saying we want to do this and others are going, that's not my club, you might be worrying about that. But I think, you know, have the courage in those convictions of, like, what's the right thing to do in terms of driving inclusion. And things do, you know, we say a lot in our community, things do get better. Like, every single LGBTQ+ fan group that's ever started has always had criticism from its own fan base first, always. But you know what? Like, every good change movement, everything that you're doing in terms of any social change, like, you hit a wall first. You have resistance. You have people that want to denigrate you. You've got, and actually you take those people on a journey, because a lot of them have never met a queer person in their lives. And actually,
well, Chris, also, I completely empathise with that again, because I was the first ever in England to come out and one of the first in the world, if not the first. And I think being the first, you kind of, you know, take that responsibility. And I didn't actually realize how big of a responsibility it was going to be. And then it became my definition from everybody else. It wasn't my own definition. It just kind of became, I became the person, you know, Leanne the gay footballer, not Leanne the footballer that happens to be gay. And I love the platform that I have to be able to do that. There were two historic FA Cup semi-finals on Sunday, which means we'll see a new name on the FA Cup trophy for the first time in a really long time. Chris and I began the show by breaking down the game in the Northwest where Manchester United hosted Chelsea. But first, let's hear how both games sounded.
Garcia in the middle of the far post. She's headed it in.
Oh,
what a start for Manchester United. 45 seconds in. Chelsea's treble hopes already under threat.
Wow. What have I just seen?
Ella Toon caught on the penalty area. Right-footed cross. Williams! 2-0 to Manchester United.
Wow. What a moment for United. 2-0 up. They're in dreamland.
Here is Charles into the penalty area for them. The angle tight. Back to James. It's 2-1. Lauren James is there, and Chelsea were not to be denied. That is such a crucial goal. And now right from the left wing crosses again. James header kept out by Earps with one of the saves of the season, surely.
I thought the one in the first half was world class, but I can't believe what I've just witnessed with that one. That was absolutely unbelievable.
Manchester United are about to beat Chelsea for the very first time. Manchester United have done it. They've beaten Chelsea and they are into an FA Cup final. It will be Manchester United against Tottenham in the Wembley final in May.
31 teams have previously reached the Women's FA Cup final. That will change here today, but will Tottenham Hotspur or Leicester City be team number 32? Rantala now into the penalty area down the right. Left foot shot from her is a brilliant goal! And Leicester City now have their eyes on Wembley.
Don't know why the defender is showing her inside.
Rose inside the penalty area, pull back for Tierney. Good save by Spencer. And Spurs here defensively are all over the place.
Should have been 2-0, is it simple as that, Nigel?
There's a mistake by Green. Jessica Naz is in here for Tottenham. And she's equalised! And the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium erupts. And this semi-final could be heading for extra time.
In a pressure moment, it's a really good finish.
The cross back into the penalty area. Thomas with the opportunity. Oh, what a brilliant save by Kopp.
Absolutely incredible.
And that is the end of 90 minutes. And we are heading for extra time here. Rantala curls in the free kick. Oh, it's off the crossbar. Bueller flicks it on. Thomas with the header. And she's done it. Martha Thomas has surely sent Tottenham to Wembley.
What a moment for Spurs.
The full-time whistle goes and Spurs are on their way to Wembley. Tottenham Hotspur have reached their first women's FA Cup final.
So, Chris, we'll come to your beloved Spurs a little bit later, but we have to kick things off with that Manchester United versus Chelsea game. What an unbelievable game this was. I did not see this one coming at all. It was the first time Manchester United have beaten Chelsea. What did you make of the game? I mean, Lucia Garcia, within 90 seconds, scores a goal. I still felt like Chelsea were always going to come back, and they didn't. And fair play to Man United. What did you make of it?
Well, it was a really interesting. It was a big shout starting with Rachel Williams and leaving Malar and Paris and Hayley Ladd, frankly, on the bench. Exactly that, Lucia Garcia, that goal, it was a real statement of intent to come out that quickly and just sort of, you know, it was a bit of a sucker punch, I felt, for Chelsea. It took them a bit of time to get back into it. But exactly what you thought, even up until the, like, 90th minute, frankly, because it went, they had the 6 or 7 minutes of additional time, I genuinely thought they were going to pull it back. And it's interesting, of course, because it's not the fairy tale goodbye for Emma Hayes, which we thought we were going to have.
Yeah, and obviously Mark Skinner has come under a lot of pressure this year. He's been quite outspoken about the lack of kind of squad depth that he has. But two back-to-back FA Cup finals, you know, especially beating Chelsea. Yeah. Great result for him. What did you make of the game and what did you make of his season so far?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, they're a bit sort of Manchester United about the whole thing, somehow expecting that they've always got to be at the top. And, you know, it's like, you know, they haven't been around that long in the WSL. They're doing very well, actually, considering that they've had sort of quite short order. I mean, they haven't been that long in the women's game, actually. And so, you know, back-to-back FA Cup final's nothing to be sniffed at. I think, you know, Mary Earps made a huge difference yesterday. And, you know, and I know, I think there's a something interesting about the fact that she didn't play the last England game as well, of just sort of saying, actually, I am the best English goalkeeper, you know, and she kept them in it. You know, there were a couple of those saves. I think Rachel Brown-Finn has said that it was the best save she's seen all season. But they got lucky as well at the end there. I wasn't sure about the Katie Zellum handball, but Rachel Williams definitely fouled Neve Charles at the end there. So I think they got lucky as well. But I guess that's what it is. You know, the universe was telling them they were going to get into that final.
Yeah, and Joe Shannon actually caught up with Mark Skinner and captain Katie Zellum after the match to see what they both had to say.
Mark, you must be so proud of them after that, through to Wembley again.
So incredibly proud. The result obviously helps, but the performance, even if you hadn't have taken the result and had gone to extra time, the performance to block, to have the character, to grow in the moments. You talk about growth moments as a team, and they don't always come in like a perfect package, but that's a perfect package growth moment for us, because it had goals. We weren't our very best football-wise. We knew that before the game, but we hadn't beaten Chelsea trying to play football. So we had to try something different. So I adapted the team, evolved the team, and everyone's played their part. Fantastic.
That must make you really proud as a coach as well, that they enacted what you wanted them to do pretty perfectly.
Yeah, and look, we're a cohesive team. And so as a coach, you set game plans, but the players have to deliver it. And they've been fantastic in their delivery of it today. I said that we had to suffer in this game. And it's how much you want to suffer, it's how much you want to win. Half-time is 2-1. And we're like, if you want to suffer, you'll win this game. And the girls have suffered. Everyone that came in suffered. Everyone probably made the fans suffer towards the end. But it's all together, and that's what got us through in this moment.
Came so close in the final last year. Can you go on and win it this year?
Yeah, I hope so. Obviously, we played Chelsea in the final last year, and now we've knocked them out to get to the final. So who actually won? Sorry, I don't know.
Tottenham. You'll play Tottenham in the final.
Okay. Did they win on penalties?
Extra time.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we played Tottenham before. They were a really good team, and we've got to prepare well for it, and that's what we're looking forward to.
And you take lots of these fans to Wembley as well.
I hope so, every single one, and hopefully 50,000 more.
Now, Chris, I mentioned before, you know, Chelsea have never lost to Manchester United. They were 2-0 down pretty early. I always felt Chelsea were going to find a way. Scoreline stayed the same, which I was quite surprised at going into half-time. I was thinking, you know, Emma would make maybe some tactical changes. No goals in the second half. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, for this Chelsea team? Because obviously Emma Hayes was announced she was leaving way early on in the season, you know, going to the US Women's National Team. They could end up potentially not winning anything in her final season. That sounds crazy, doesn't it?
It really does. And actually, I'm sure I'm not the only one drawing parallels between Emma Hayes and Jurgen Klopp. And actually seeing them both saying, oh, you know, we're leaving, this has been incredible, and what they've both achieved for their clubs. And I just thought that somehow they just, both teams would just kick on from there, go and like win everything to sort of send them off, both off on a high. But yesterday was a real sort of moment to think about it for both of them, to say, this might not go to script. And I feel for Emma, because I think she's been remarkable for the game in England. I also appreciate there's a lot of pressure to put on one coach, you know, and her book, you know, is even called Kill the Unicorn. It's like, I'm not a unicorn. It's part of all, you know, it's part of a much wider ecosystem in the club, in the game, etc. But, you know, we're very lucky to have had her in the WSL and in the English game for so long. And, you know, I'm no fan of Chelsea, Leanne, as you can imagine, but I would like to see her go out on top somehow. However that is, you know, so from a league perspective, I don't really mind who wins the league. So I guess, you know, but I guess the Champions League is what she wants. So, you know, here's hoping for that semi-final to go their way.
Yeah. And obviously Joe Shannon actually caught up with Emma Hayes after the game to hear her thoughts on how the game ended.
Emma, thanks for talking to us. Yeah. What's the main emotion at the moment?
I just reflect on the game, you know. As a team, you know, they'd entered our box four times in the first half and scored two goals. At this level, you can't do that. So, you know, our challenge from that position, when you don't defend well as a team, albeit it's a mistake in the first instance and a throw-in in the second, they're a top side. It meant we had to do a lot of chasing, and we did that. We got a goal back for half time, and Mary Earps made some world-class saves.
It was an incredible stop, wasn't it? And do you credit Manchester United for their resilience? Because you dominated so much that second half especially.
I mean, congratulations to Manchester United. I wish them luck in the final.
So, Chris, there's a lot going around on social media about the incident with Lauren James and Millie Turner. What were your thoughts on that? I mean, I'm a big Lauren James fan. I think sometimes certain players come under the spotlight a little bit more. I think in the women's game, we saw when Jonas Edelvall and Emma Hayes kind of went at it, it was like this big thing. But in the men's game, it's kind of every single game is like that. What did you make of that situation?
Well, I'm a big fan of Lauren James as well. And I think that she gets unduly criticised. You know, it's like we all play with a certain passion. They're both quite tasty, Lauren James and Millie Turner. But you hear so much more about it with Lauren James. And, you know, I don't want to say it, but I am going to say it. There's definitely something around the fact that she's like one of the top players in the country and she's a black woman. And it doesn't matter. Like, I don't think people don't do it on purpose. There's probably nothing malicious or mendacious. But you see a black woman in that position and somehow there's a way of wanting to sort of pull her down. So, you know, I'm just not having it. I don't like the narrative around it. I think other players get away with loads more. You know, no one, you know, let's just talk about Rachel Williams for a second. Rachel Williams used to play for Spurs. Great, you know, great player. She's a very aggressive player. I don't hear anybody talking about Rachel Williams. So, I don't know. It makes me cross.
Thank you for saying that, though, Chris, because I feel the exact same way. And there's a lot of, you know, I think some players always come under more scrutiny, but it seems like it's only certain players that do. And I think when it comes from someone like you, and that's why you're such a great ally, that, you know, it doesn't mean it means more, but people think sometimes when they hear it from me, here we go again. But it is the reality. You know, I think it's pretty normal for players to kind of the men's game every single week. These things happen, don't they? And it's really not that. Yeah, OK, maybe sometimes in the World Cup, you know, against Nigeria, she let herself down, but it's not the end of the world. And I feel like if it was other players, that wouldn't be the case. So I really appreciate you saying that and kind of bringing light to things that I always do. But you're a fantastic ally in that way. And I just appreciate you for saying that. I'm glad you're with me.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We then finally got round to discussing Chris's beloved Spurs after their victory against Leicester in North London. So talk to me about yesterday. You were obviously at the game, as you are every game that you're at, men's, women's, every single game. What was the atmosphere like at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and just the feeling afterwards when you won?
Honestly, Leanne, I don't think I can put it into words. We were all just so, so happy. And it's such a cliche talking about a journey. But honestly, at the end of last season, we played a relegation match at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. We played Reading and basically whoever won that match was going to stay in the WSL. That wasn't that long ago. And then here we are on the cusp of an FA Cup final. And as I said earlier, you know, like hanging over a railing at Cheshunt, like not 5-6 years ago, with players from that team who brought us up from the Championship. You know, Jess Nas scored we drew with Villa the last game of the season when we got promoted, and Jess Naz scored the goal that equalised when we needed a point. And in the last minute, Ash Neville headed a ball off the line. Now, those two were instrumental yesterday, and they're instrumental in getting us into this league. And now to be in an FA Cup final is incredible. And there's so many FA Cup journeys, again, to use that term, in our team. You know, Beth England and Drew Spence have won the FA Cup 2 and 3 times, respectively. Amy James-Turner was in the 2015 FA Cup final for Notts County, which was the first one to be played at Wembley, losing 1-0 to a Chelsea team with Drew Spence in it. I mean, all those stories, you know, Martha Thomas only got 2 minutes in last year's FA Cup final for Manchester United. You know, she scores the winner yesterday. I'm a bit gutted for Grace Clinton. That's the only thing I'd say, because she's, you know, been really important for Spurs this season, and she's not going to get to play. But yeah, and like Becky Spencer, like 2 saves in the quarterfinal. Absolutely brilliant. She was in that 2015 final as well, and then to be there now, you know, I'm so pleased for Becky back in the team now as well. You know, I'm a big fan of hers. So, and as you can imagine, the scenes on full time were incredible, from the team, from the fans, you know, and we've got that great stadium with a really good sound system, so there were, it was a proper party atmosphere as well. Just look on social media and you can see it all. It was,
yeah. I know, I saw Beyonce at that stadium, so I know exactly how that sound system is. And, you know, you went behind in the first 10 minutes. Fantastic Rantala strike. I mean, she only seems to score bangers. She's having a really impressive season with Leicester. I think a real, you know, bright light for them. Was there ever a moment where you felt nervous? Because obviously being at home against Leicester, probably never going to get, no disrespect to Leicester, an easier opportunity to make a final, because usually it's the every year Arsenal, City are in that situation. So was there ever a moment where the nerves were kicking in?
Great question, because honestly, when that goal went in, I turned around to my mate and I was like, I know it seems daft, but I hadn't contemplated this. Like, we were all there ready for a party, you know, flags were out, the sun was out, there was an all-woman brass band as we were walking in, like all sorts of, the trumpeter was there playing "Oh, When the Spurs." We go 1-0 down, and I'm like, oh my God, I hadn't contemplated it. So it was really hard. But then also, you know, that it got, you know, we did start well, and my partner's mate was there, and she was there with her 2 kids, and they'd never been to a football match before. And she came up to me at halftime and said, I don't know if this is the right thing, but I feel like they're making chances. So that's good, right? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, making chances. And so, you know, they just kept pushing. And it was really interesting. I like looked over to another mate who was sat over there when Robert made his substitutions and brought off Grace Clinton. And I was just like, what's he doing? And it's like, you would have done something else. But that's why he's the boss, right? Because those changes made a huge difference. And, you know, it was wonderful from Jess. She did a thing, because often when she's running onto a ball, she takes 2 touches, and she took 1 touch and then just it went in. So something they've been working on, bowl accounts. So yeah, absolutely brilliant. And Martha Thomas, 2 match, you know, season defining goals for us in the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, because she scored against Arsenal, first time we've ever beaten them, and then yesterday. So yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I'm delighted for you. I can see you're still bouncing off the walls. Before we get into what happened in extra time, TalkSport's Uma Gurab spoke to interim manager Jennifer Foster after the game to get her thoughts on the performances.
Hugely disappointed. You know, I think it will hurt, and it will probably hurt for a little while. But like I just said to the players in the huddle at the end, this won't be the last time we're in a semi-final. And look, I always think the best teams have to take a hit like this to get better. So look, couldn't have asked anything more from the players. So yeah, just disappointing to not be able to get it over the line, but there's nothing more that I could have asked of those players.
For most of normal time, you looked like the stronger team. Did you feel like you deserved more out of the game in the end?
Yeah, and I think we didn't quite take our chances. I think we probably didn't create enough clinical chances, and then the couple that we did have ended up in Becky Spencer making a good save. Or so sometimes I thought they left quite a lot of chances out there as well. So sometimes you get a bit of a feel when those ones aren't quite going in, that the longer it goes on, the more Tottenham are probably going to push to get the equaliser. Sorry.
Despite the loss today, it's been a pretty amazing season for Leicester all around. Lots to be positive about. How are you feeling going into next season and beyond? What are the goals?
The goals are to climb higher up the table. You know, we said that we wanted to finish in that top half this season, and look, that's still the aim. Today will hurt, and it's important that we obviously digest that. But you know, we've got
so for the
Arsenal
sound of that,
Chris,
next week,
so
you know, she's really pleased
we need
with her side performance.
Prepared for that
so
and,
she should
keep
be. You know, you can be proud. They still lost the game.
From these last
were you
few
surprised
games?
That you know Leicester didn't start to throw everything at Tottenham, especially after going ahead? It was almost like, you know, they didn't really ever stamp their authority down on the game.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because I think, you know, when you've got someone like Jutta Rantala, you're, you know, giving her that space to shoot from there was, but I think then at that point you're like, oh, okay, we can't do that anymore. So we shored that up at least. But I thought Deanne Rose was like, gave Ash Neville a really, really hard time. So I was surprised to see her coming off, to be honest, because, you know, and I don't know what the reasoning for that was. So yeah, I was surprised by that. But, you know, they gave it a good old go. I mean, I think Robert said it wasn't a great performance, but we don't care. And I think that...
Oh, you know, I said, because you're in the final, you know, all that really matters is analysis is great, you know, but you can kind of win in a game is all that matters. And Umagurav actually spoke to match winner Martha Thomas at full time to get her thoughts on the side's historic win.
I'm over the moon. Just so happy for the girls, the team, the staff, everyone, the fans. We really dug deep to get over the line for the three, well, not 3 points, but to, you know, to get ourselves to Wembley.
You've played at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium twice this season and you've scored the winner both times, making a bit of a habit of it.
Yeah, I just said to the chairman, I don't know what he is, but I just said we should play him more often because, you know, we're getting the results. And yeah, we like to play football, and it's such a great surface to play on. So yeah, I'm just so happy.
Now, Chris, Martha Thomas, you know, seems to score important goals in the Tottenham Stadium. You know, fantastic signing for Manchester United. Got off to an absolute flyer at the beginning of the season. Then the goals kind of dried up. What do you make of her time at Tottenham so far? She must be down as a fan favourite already because she seems to score really important goals.
Absolutely. She was really crucial at the beginning of the season. Beth England was injured and she came. She scored a hat trick away at Villa. And we were like, yeah, we've got this. Then Beth came back and there was a little moment where none of us were sure about who was going to be playing, whether they could play together, you know. And actually yesterday we were laughing because the answer yesterday was playing neither of them at nine. And Jess Naz was up there and they were playing in that front three. And actually, look, I'm going to leave that to Robert. I'm not sure what I think the answer is. I'd always, you know, for me, I put Beth England on the team sheet first. I think that experience, her ability to just like work that. She got hit in the head. She fell over twice from being hit in the head with a ball yesterday and somehow managed to come out and like played like nothing else. Her leadership is exceptional. I'd love to find a way to see them both play. But Robert did say that Martha was the epitome of to dare is to do. So, you know, delighted for her, obviously for the team. And, you know, I wouldn't want Robert's headache to try and figure out how he's going to set them all up for the final.
Yeah, I mean, it does help a little bit. You touched upon it about Grace Clinton. I don't want to go too much into that, but I'm gutted for her that she won't be able to play in the final. You know, you must be a little bit happier that it's not Chelsea. I'm not saying that Manchester United are going to be easy. For Grace Clinton, she wishes it was Chelsea because then she could have played. But, you know, what are your predictions for the final? I bet you can't wait for it already.
I mean, I literally can't wait. I think it's ironic, as always, that we're actually playing Manchester United at Lee Sports Village on Saturday. So I guess there's going to be a little bit of practice for the team and for Robert to figure out how to set up against Manchester United without Grace. Listen, I cannot go into that game without thinking that we've got a chance. You know, football's a funny old game, Leanne, with all those other cliches. On our day, we can beat anyone. Why not? This season, we've beaten Arsenal for the first time. You know, we knocked Manchester City out of the cup. There's no reason why we can't go there and you know, that occasion to just lift us. And as I say, we do have some experience in that team of playing at that level. So why not? Why not? And do you know what? I don't mind how we win it. If it bounces off a body part that's not, you know, associated with football, I don't mind. Like, you know, a win's a win. So, yeah, I mean, I literally cannot wait.
Finally, we were joined by my former teammate, Judy Fleeting, to discuss her incredible career and life since retiring. Fleet, how are you doing? I know we saw each other recently, obviously, at our celebration for the quadruple winners at the Emirates. I can honestly say I've not laughed that much in a long time. But how are you and where are you?
I'm good. I'm back home in Scotland. I've just been caught in the rain from the school run, so no, back home. It was a good day, wasn't it? It was good to catch up and see everyone again.
Yeah, it was. And I think you can never recreate like that type of banter. I never really miss playing football, but I miss being in a dressing room. And I think we're really fortunate at Arsenal that we had so many, you know, top players. And honestly, I know we have a lot of laughs together and stuff, but you are one of my favourite teammates I've ever played with. I think you have the ability to make me look good because your finishing was just exquisite. And we played together in Soccer Aid like recently. And I remember thinking, you've still got it. Like, that finishing, that natural ability in front of goal and the eye for the goal, is that something that was always natural for you? Or is it something you worked on as a youngster?
I think for me, my finishing was something that I think when I was playing, I wasn't bothered by, like, I missed loads of sitters, I missed loads of chances. But I think the difference between maybe myself and other players was it actually didn't bother me. I would just go again and go again. And when you were at a team at Arsenal, the chances came like constantly. There was just a stream of opportunities, assists. I was just lucky. I played with really good players. So the opportunities that you had in front of goal were way more than it would have been had I played in a different team.
Yeah, but I think you're selling yourself short a little bit, Fleets, because I think anybody, I know people have jumped on the women's football train in the recent years. You know, I had Marianne Spacey on my show a couple of weeks ago, another natural finisher in front of goal that I think is quite lacking within the game. But obviously the game has changed so much since we both retired. I mean, you're a qualified teacher, still teach, you know. Talk to me about that balance of yourself when you were playing and teaching and, you know, flight. We'll get on to the jokes we have about you flying for every game later on.
I was waiting to see how long it was going to be
don't worry about that. But talk to me about the balance of, you know, working and playing. How difficult was that?
Yeah, so like I went through university to be a PE teacher. At the end of my uni course, I got asked to play pro in America. So went out to the first pro league. Played a season and a half, and then when I came home, that league folded. So at the time, Arsenal weren't professional. Vic Akers had asked me if I would sign down there, and kind of said my job then, when I came home, I had got a job teaching in Scotland, full time, Monday to Friday. And he'd said, listen, you could still live in Scotland, kind of work where you always planned to work. Because I don't know if my job would have transferred down south either. I wouldn't have been able to afford to live down there because Arsenal weren't going to be paying like as much as what my teaching salary at that time would be. So when I first went to Arsenal, I think it was in January. So it was like halfway through a season. And I thought, right, I'll see how the rest of the season goes. I'll fly up and down. I'll work Monday to Friday. And then on a Sunday morning, I'll fly down. I'll train with a men's team or my brother's team, and I'll fly down in the morning, play in the game, and then fly home. And most bizarre. I know it was bizarre, but for me, if that wasn't going to be kind of offered to me, I wouldn't have been able to play for Arsenal. I wouldn't have been able to afford to move down south. It was part time. I think he's trained twice a week at that point.
I'm literally cracking up as we laugh about this all the time, where the fact that just visualising you playing for Arsenal, my teammate, you'd fly with Colin, your husband, who's obviously at Rangers, one of the coaches there now, the men, he was our goalie coach as well. You'd land, play in the game, sometimes come off in the game if we were winning comfortably, just so you could fly back to Scotland. And what I love about this story, right, is none of us had a problem with it. Everyone loved you because you're a great teammate. But isn't that crazy to think about that you used to literally fly for games, train with a boys' team midweek? I mean, we were training twice a week. We won the quadruple. We won the Champions League. But, like, we were all laughing about it in the Emirates, wasn't we? Because we were like, Fleets used to fly every single game and play. Banging a hat-trick, wave us off, see you later.
there was, like, times when I would be coming in with maybe 1 hour to go to the game. I had been at training. And I was like literally like just looking at the wall at the set plays because you guys had been working on them kind of throughout the week, just trying like familiarise myself out for the warm-up. And like, yeah, like as you say, sometimes it was like you need to go. So as soon as the final whistle had gone. I was in the changing rooms, I was showered, and I was back to the airport and back home to Scotland. So, like, you say, like, a good teammate. I was a good teammate on the pitch, I think, with the players at Arsenal. Like, was very lucky, and that it seemed to click for us really quickly on the pitch. But it probably took me quite a long time to even know anyone, like, their personality-wise off the pitch, because I spent, like, zero time with anybody, except maybe, I think, the first time we, like, I maybe got to spend a bit more time with everyone was, like, when we go away on European trips. But other than that, I'd see us for, like, the warm-up, and then that was it. I was off. Like, no one's seen me again for another week.
You know, one of my other favourite, this honestly cracks me up, Fleets, because the Kim Little story always sticks in my mind. And we spoke about it the other week, that Kim Little, one of the best ever players, you know, still playing now. I remember she came with you and we were thinking, why has Fleets got her mate in the dressing room? We're talking, you know, Kim at that time was about 17 years old.
Yeah.
You know, Fleets has brought a family member. You know, Vic is one of the best coaches I've ever had, top guy, but you know, he's not the best communicator sometimes. And he just did the team talk. We're thinking, Fleets has got her friend here. And then afterwards, we were like, she's getting changed. And it was Kim Little, right?
It was so funny because she was still a young player, so not many people would have known who she was. So she travelled in the car. I think it was an away game, so I had travelled down in the car that morning, and Kim and her mum had came with Colin and I. And she was obviously just in normal clothing because she hadn't got her kit or anything yet. So she came into the changing rooms, and I remember everyone like looking at her. I was just assuming that Vic had said, we've signed a new player. She's coming, it's her first game at the weekend. And she's in the changing rooms, just dressed in like a normal tracksuit. And then I remember he's been like, who's your mate? Who's your mate? And I was like, you guys know that she's a signed player. And everyone was like, no. Like, it was once he'd finished his team talk and left and she still stayed in the changing rooms, I could see people like looking at each other going, why is Fleet's mate just hanging about for the team talk, going to hang about and watch everyone as we get changed? Like, what is she doing here? And I remember just thinking, I brought a pal.
Do you think Kim actually knows this story? Did you tell her after? Because I haven't actually shared this story with her, and I'm going to share it with her if she hasn't heard it already, because I think it's absolutely brilliant, Fleets. It absolutely makes me laugh every time we talk about it, because Kim Little's one of the best players, you know, ever. And like none of us knew she was signing for us, but I want to bring it back to you.
I think she must know. I think she must. But I also remember she was on the bench, and I remember like her coming on, like just a young girl, and whoever got taken off must have been like, I can't believe I'm getting subbed for Fleet's mate.
And then the next thing, in that perspective,
she didn't lose the ball. Didn't lose the ball once. Just a young girl, like, bags of confidence when she was on the pitch, like just knocking the ball about. And then after the game, I remember the players being like, by the way, your mate can come back. I'm like, is my pal allowed back?
That is actually really true. I mean, I think it's a brilliant story. I just want to bring it back to you just to close. You know, obviously, 116 goals, 121 games for Scotland. I think you sell yourself short a little bit when you say you just were surrounded by great players, because you just had this eye for goal. And I don't actually think you get spoken about enough. I think within the game you do. But I think obviously due to the fact that, I mean, you scored hat-tricks in FA Cup finals. What was the highlight of your career? What do you look back on and think, massive highlight, apart from the quadruple?
Like, I think, like, within the quadruple season, I think the European Cup was, like, just to highlight the fact now when you look back on it and you just see what a massive achievement that was for us as an English team. Like when you look at the other teams that were professional at the time and we still hadn't gone to that status yet, I was still up and down. But that was like a massive highlight. I loved my years at Arsenal, like I really did. I felt that probably my early stages of my career at Arsenal was probably the best that I had. And then on the other side, representing my country and kind of captaining Scotland again was just like going to be the pinnacle of your career when you're a footballer. And when I look back, like both those teams, like the team at Arsenal, probably that quadruple season, and then the kind of friends that I've got from the Scotland setup still to this day are they kind of what I remember is like the funny times in the change rooms, the funny times when you're in the hotel, and yeah, I loved the football side of it, but you're kind of left with the memories of the people, and when we went to the Emirates recently, and you forget just how much fun it is to be back around that group of people again. And just, I mean, the only thing that you'd probably say that we shared was those times at Arsenal, yet they're enough for us to laugh from the second we get together to the second my helicopter arrives.
I agree with you. I've never had that again. I've had some great moments, but, you know, I've never really had those moments again. But I feel like we could talk about our time at Arsenal all day. I'm going to have to get you into the studio on your private plane at some point, please, to come to small studios. But our time has come to an end, mate. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for this week. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week, joined by Crystal Palace manager Laura Kaminski, as the championship title really heats up.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.